IMS has asked Tanisara and Kitasaro to talk with us about the 9-day retreat they'll be leading in March. The course is titled The Mysterious Way of the Heart, Where Wisdom and Compassion Meet, and runs for 9 days from March 5th to 14th. Tanisara and Kitasaro, your 2010 retreat at IMS will deal with the theme of wisdom and compassion. What inspires you to offer this?
It's a theme that we've actually focused on within many of the retreats we've done over the years. And we have done that very deliberately, I feel, because we consider that the two great wings of the Buddha's teaching, wisdom and compassion, are essential for a balanced and integrated life. And often the emphasis, overemphasis on wisdom, meditation methods that evoke transcendence, letting go, which was perhaps very strongly emphasized in our monastic training and of course influenced us very deeply, doesn't always allow for a really more engaged way of being in the world. And so exploring that actually at the depth of wisdom, compassion really emerges, as wisdom inducts us more into an emptying process, and we begin to open out of our self structures that are conditioned in ways that are quite constricting and not always that expansive. As we open out of those and begin to let go of identification, then what we realize is our innate interconnectedness, obviously, with all that is. And that, at the depth of that, that's the experience of compassion. We're resonating with, we're feeling with. But then, you know, that's one level of insight, but then to mature that in action and conscious engagement in the world, particularly in the lay life, feels like a very important dimension to focus on and explore. What does that look like? How does that express itself? What does that mean for our lives?
Kitasaro, would you like to add anything to that?
I thought that was a beautiful answer.
Yes.
Just to underline, wisdom and compassion are different expressions, as words, of the activity of the one mind. And the Buddha's teachings always looks at the tendency to get imbalanced and extreme. That's why it's also called the middle way. And when we're stuck to the world and only know clinging, the wisdom teachings of investigating and letting go are wonderful, and they give space and a sense of peace. But as Tanisha was saying, though that's a significant, profound insight, it can leave one with a sense that the trouble's out there and one backs off. And so the embracing teachings of making sure that our peace is not limited to when we don't feel like we have much contact. The embracing teachings are very important for balancing out, and also it leads to a whole new round of deepening the wisdom, because some of the tendencies, some of the chronic deep-seated fears, conceits, worries, despairs are really tough to see into, and sometimes the patient, kindly, compassionate hanging out with allows for a gradual softening and the space for our wisdom to operate. So the two balance each other, support each other, and eventually we realize that they're not separate.
Can you give us a flavor of your practice and how it's evolved over the decades?
There's always a challenging dynamic that's on offer. You know, there's always something that's going to be challenging. But what I have found in terms of practicing over 30 odd years now is that my capacity to meet the moment has become more, there's more willingness to meet what actually is, to reflect with it. There's more ability to really, to not be so fearful or not so contracted. I think in the early years I used practice to almost escape from contact, escape from the sense of being touched by the world. And there's a gradual increase of fearlessness, a gradual sense that whatever gets comes up, whatever, you know, challenges one gets met by, that the practice is able to respond, that there's a respond. And also within that there's a deepening trust that the source of my inspiration at first was more external, teachers, texts, and in some ways a really deep need to be confirmed by someone external, a teacher, or that I was doing it right, that it was going right. And that has dropped away, and I find there's much more direct sense of intuitive connection to my own inner source of confirmation and empowerment within the practice, and a trusting of that, you know, trusting of that, and trusting that what whatever needs, whatever qualities I need to meet the moment will be there for me. So that has been an evolution, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Kitasaro, is there anything you'd like to add about practice?
Well, obviously our journeys are individual, so I would certainly underline, echo what Tanisra said. There's something that is quite constant, this always making the effort to return to how it is. But I can see some clear evolution. In my early years of monastic life, I was very interested in spiritual, in meditative experience, you know, the more dramatic, meditative, visionary states or subtle states and things like that. There was a certain excitement about, you know, getting deeper and deeper states of calm and things happening. And then, you know, I gradually started to realize the greed in that and the ongoing suffering of that. But on the other hand, there was a certain early days skill, little by little, cultivated in steadying the mind. Then for many years, a decade or so, my main practice was being with sickness. I got very, very ill with typhoid and sickness, so I worked a lot with patients, just being with pain, just being with the body. And then after about a decade or so, when I was appointed as a senior monk of a small monastery, then the practice had changed a lot. Though I still had sickness and was conserving my energy, it was opening up more to what Tanisra was talking about, the expanding my practice more to include others and finding ways to listen in to people's experience around me and to try to respond in a way that would be helpful. But still my inner tendency was similar to Tanisra. I found my greatest joy in letting go and going to peacefulness. So I guess in the most recent decade and a half, and since leaving the monastery and getting married to Tanisra, working in the world, going to Africa, which is in a challenging, very challenging place. The addressing that imbalance, that preference for letting go, to encouraging more the welcoming, and really focusing on this bodhisattva ideal, this ideal of being committed to awakening, but really sensing our kinship, our true kinship with all living beings, and really deepening that commitment to try to find skillful ways to respond to the needs of those around, and to keep checking, why am I preferring certain states over others? To keep really working on learning to establish that awakened refuge and awareness right in the midst of, if we're working in the impoverished area, or if someone's dying with us, or if I'm trying to learn about a legal structure so that we can get our charity that we created in Africa operating, to learn to dissolve these dichotomies between spiritual practice in the world.
Both of you have touched on this somewhat, and I'd just like to know if there's anything else you'd like to say about how our practice in general supports our effectiveness in helping others.
Well, to me, the most profound aspect of that is that our practice essentially allows us to be more realistic, more with the reality of things. The more we're in tune with how things actually are, not only within ourselves, but with others, then we're able to feel into a situation and respond to what actually is, sense where the obstacles are. The deeper our practice is, the more or less likely we are to just be coming from biases and views and opinions. So I feel like the practice, is, for me, has been hugely helpful. One, because I get so regularly humbled by things not always going the way I want them to be in my own practice through sickness and other circumstances of life. That willingness to let go, breathe in and out, begin again, that's so helpful also in addressing the difficulties in one's students, in the circumstances in the world that one is working with. It really helps with patience, really helps with forgiveness, beginning again. You know, for me, without practice, I don't know how people, without this realigning day after day, moment after moment, I would so easily get burned out, so easily give up. So do you have thoughts about that, Dennis?
Well, I think it's very hard to be, I think what you just touched on your last point, the burning out, although obviously it's, you know, one gets tired and needs to take breaks. I think that when there's the practice really helps to highlight the sense of self that we operate from. And when there's that assumption that we operate from me doing it in a certain way, then we set ourselves up, I feel, for a sense of disappointment or failure or struggle or frustration, because it never goes according to how we would like it to go. I mean, it's just, and it's not to say that we should deny and try and repress that part of the sense of self that arises, but we just need to illuminate it and to know its limitation. And that, if that's what practice can do, and then from that place it allows us to be more resonant, going back to what you started with, more realistic, Kirisaro, what you're saying, it allows us to really resonate with what's really needing, what's happening here. Is it the time to let go, to just have some equanimity because it is as it is? Is it the time to respond? Is it the time to be strong and say, no, this isn't appropriate, and set a boundary? Is it the time to welcome and be patient? Is it the time to give? Is it the time not to? It feels like there's not one strategy, you know, and there isn't actually any fixed strategy. And if the practice is alive, then it has to be responsive. And to maintain that integrity of response, it's important, it seems important, or it seems helpful to be able to illuminate that which blocks, which is a rigid sense of self and a rigid agenda. So for me, that's where the edge I work at.
Yeah. And lastly, Kintasara, why don't you start with this one? How does your practice inform your teaching style?
I realize it's, in a way, it's just an obvious assumption to me. I only teach what I practice. I'm hoping that the two really merge. To me, one of the real warning lights in the teaching professions, a big red flashing lights, if you're teaching what you're not practicing, you know, to me, that's definitely not a good sign. And I cherish meditation. It helps keep me alive, the composing, the calming, the becoming skilled with energy systems because of a lot of illness, learning how to refresh ourselves in a way that doesn't exploit anyone, because that's so important to me. We offer in our teaching the skillful means around calming and insight meditations, because I'm very interested in the suffering in in my life and when it happens, and inquiring into that and looking at that and being able to at times let go and feel that relief. In my own life, recitation, chanting, devotional practices are very important because of a chronic tendency to contract around some worry, some doubt. So I found bowing is just a way. I find skillful means for myself of letting go. And recitation of teachings is a way of remembering core principles that I do cherish. It's a way of realigning commitment. Living in Africa, South Africa, as we do, with all the difficulties, it's so easy to get just devastated by challenges, betrayals, situations that look intractable and just beyond help at times. The practice of just learning to deepen our trust in what we can do, our trust in the refuge, our trust in our commitment to harmlessness and sharing helps give the strength to come back again. So in our teaching, you know, all things that we do, we offer teaching in our teaching. And I guess the last thing, we don't consider ourselves, I mean, we teach, but, and this came from our teacher, Ajahn Chah, we don't, that sense of I'm a teacher, we can say that. We try not to really hold on to that as an identity. We share, but we're practitioners. And so while we're teaching, we make that also part of our practice. Know our state of mind, share that. Are a mouthpiece for the group, but know that we're also part of the group of those continuing to learn.
That's exactly how I see it. It is to teach is a practice, is an aspect of practice. It's not an identity, but it has been a journey of cultivating some skill and not always getting it right. Every time one engages teaching, there's always, you know, the sense of maybe how to fine-tune, how to perhaps communicate something a bit more clearly, how to try and be authentic without flooding the group or your teaching with your personal material in a way that's inappropriate, so how to contain your own inner process and distinguish that from what's needed in the group so you're not demanding that people psychologically or emotionally support you in a certain way. You're not sort of trying to milk people for something from that role, you know, and that's a discipline. It is a discipline because one has one's own personal sense of wanting to be affirmed and all of those things that get activated in a teaching role, or the opposite, feeling hopeless if it doesn't go well. So it's a real ground for looking at a lot of self-view and all the psychological states that come up around that. And it's a discipline to be honest to oneself, authentic as much as one can in the process, and yet protective of the space. It's a kind of almost a sacred space that one's entering into in retreat, because people are going, they need a space of safety. They're becoming more vulnerable as they open into their inner process. There needs to be protection, there needs to be care, there needs to be some, you know, compassion and those kind of qualities. And one doesn't always get it right, and, you know, it's not always easy. But I think if one's willing to keep self-reflecting and learning and have some humility to sense where it didn't go right or hear feedback, and have a peer group, people that can, that aren't, you know, that can actually give you, I mean, Kisara and I function like that quite well for each other as well. We give each other quite a lot of feedback about how we come across or such and such. So I feel that it's important to have safety mechanisms. It's important to take it seriously, and it's important to take it lightly, you know, as a role. And it's one that I'm always learning about. And essentially, I think the essential piece that Kisara just mentioned is to see it as a field of practice rather than an identity.
Thank you both for taking the time to talk with us. I really enjoyed this.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.